And there we go. Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gabber.io, and I'm here today with Elise Peterson, the founder of TLET. Good afternoon, Elise. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It looks like you have a whole tea set all set up right there for us. Is that true?
Yeah. This is my Gung Fu tea table I use for streaming. So I do a lot of streaming on Twitch and YouTube since the pandemic has started. And it's all tea. I do tea education and also have conversations around civility and hospitality industry, as well as sustainability and other topics related to the business.
Very cool. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Yeah, so I am a food scientist. I have a BS in food science and technology. I worked in the industry for several years in different areas of the industry, always trying to find the place of providing sustenance for the public, because that's why I got into it. I love food. I love sharing food. But even in the organic certified arena, I found that the big food or processed food industry really wasn't focused on providing sustenance. It was very much just focused on sales and marketing and trying to morph people's relationship they have with food. So a friend convinced me to join the Peace Corps. I lived in Niger, West Africa for a few years working with rural farmers. I then did an assignment in the Caribbean. And when I returned to the States and worked in the food industry again, the first job that was able to attract me in was a tea company. And this was my first experience with tea. I was a quality control supervisor for the largest tea manufacturer in the world. They have a processing facility in Hawaii where I was living. And through that, I learned about tea. I didn't become obsessed with it quite just yet, but I was interested in it as an industry because it was healthy. I felt like I was working in an industry that was providing a healthy product, but there still was a lot of lack of transparency of the origin and of supply chain, which is very common for all of the food industry when things are commodified and aggregated and traveling around the world several times over. And so I did a Japanese MBA to learn business and to learn Japanese language. And through that experience, I've networked into the tea industry, working with tea farmers all over the world. And now I'm much more of a tea ambassador than a connoisseur or an aficionado. But now as a tech entrepreneur, I am able to leverage technology and scalability to bring the concepts of decentralization and information sharing to resolve a lot of the transparency issues and empower more of the small scale tea growers to connect directly with the market.
Wow. So is that what TLET does? Is you connect the tea growers with, who do you connect them with?
We connect them with the entire world, but the actual business mechanism and the majority of the profit revenue generation that we focus on is supply chain between businesses. So that's between the farmers and then food companies. So like the big food companies that I used to work for, helping them with their supply chain for traceability and just for food safety consideration. Mm-hmm. But we also do provide a lot of information to the consumer. I do have a retail product and a retail website because people are curious and they're wanting to learn about origins of food. And so it's almost like we have to create this whole culture of curiosity in the market in order to better support the business side of it to engage more with transparency versus the conventional commodity system that most businesses are used to working in.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but tea is actually much more popular in other parts of the world than the U.S., although gaining in the U.S., correct?
Big time. Yeah. So tea is the most popular beverage after water, of course. Maybe it seems strange in the U.S., but tea is growing exponentially. And you probably have seen it in the past decade or so. Mm-hmm. Maybe you would have seen like a fancy like afternoon tea shop. But now you'll see several different like hipstery type of, you know, fourth wave tea shops that are doing matcha drinks and doing tea cocktails. It's become much more hip to be into tea. Not to say that it's overtaken coffee quite yet, but I think the cultural significance that tea does have once mass market of America does start to adopt the lifestyle of tea, we will see a lot more tea than coffee.
Yeah, and even some of the bigger ones that, you know, like the big one up in Seattle is selling tea now, correct? They have been for a few years.
Yeah. I mean, yep. Definitely. And exploring more and trying to learn more about the industry and trying to innovate more. And so I'm looking to empower the mom and pop shops, the small businesses, the small to medium sized businesses to bring a higher quality product, a more authentic, genuine product to the market versus, you know, the big guys, although, you know, the big guys certainly are expanding into that market. But I think for small scale business, there is a very interesting curiosity for, you know, direct trade or single origin or storytelling in the marketing about where the products come from.
Would you compare it to what happened in the craft beer industry, like about 10, 15 years ago?
Exactly, just like that, but even bigger and even better. It's actually probably more comparable to wine, but it's even more of a rabbit hole than wine. Really? You know, I do a lot of work with wine sommeliers that, you know, it's not that they don't like wine anymore, but they end up falling in love with tea. The main reason you can endlessly explore tea and not develop an alcohol problem or, you know, any kind of potential for that. But the origins of tea and the diversity of where tea can come from, how the different varieties can move around the world and be processed in different ways, is very interesting to wine experts. And it's even more diverse in deeper rabbit hole than wine is. But there's not a whole lot of tea supply chain happening to support that. In China, there's quite a mature domestic connoisseurship market for tea. But China is where all the good tea is coming from. So it's just there domestically. So not a lot of it has extended out of China or Taiwan or Japan. There are certainly niche tea shops of individuals who have their own relationships in China and have started bringing teas in. But as far as like a large scale distributor that's going to be selling to restaurants and selling to large brands and grocery brands, that system is highly commodified and not specialized.
Interesting. I never would have thought this, but then again, you know, I live near, Napa Valley. So
Yeah. So you know how like Amazon started just doing books, and now Amazon sells everything? Well, the reason why was for focus. When you're building a marketplace platform, it's very important to have focus to keep the marketplace interesting for both the seller and the buyer to grow upon itself. And so Camellia sinensis tea is one crop. It's like a closed knit, easy community to develop influence over and to connect. And so I am a specialist in tea, and this platform is applied to tea. But the ultimate goal is that we would be building something like the Alibaba for the food industry, where any agriculture commodity can be traded between the farmer and the business buyer. And that's the ultimate goal, but it would be this large scale B2B marketplace exclusively for independent farmers to be the sellers. So that's the only discrimination that we have, is that they need to be independent and they need to be transparent. Most independent farmers are willing to be transparent. It's the commodity, large scale suppliers that don't want to be honest about everything. So that's the only thing that we discriminate against. And I foresee that we will be starting to make this expansion very fast, especially right now after the pandemic. There has been some major strains to logistics and international supply chain networks, specifically around the cargo ships and container cargo. There's a shortage of containers in China. It's a big deal. Google it. It's a really big deal. And things are going to start becoming very expensive because of scarcity. Things just can't be brought in. And so the next big project that I'm looking to expand into is in logistics. And I'm doing my maiden voyage this spring to bring in a large shipment of the fresh new teas in my own sailboat. And the goal is that since we do work with such high quality, small scale products, even a smaller vessel that can only hold 10 tons is a very valuable shipment for us. And so what I want to do is engage a fleet of smaller vessels to decentralize the cargo shipment industry, to make it just as competitively priced, more environmentally friendly, because it's relying more on sail energy than fossil fuels. And then also, faster than the containers, because right now container shipping, it's more expensive and there's like year long or longer wait lists to get your products exported out of China or other countries.
Wow. I mean, I knew there were delays in out of China. I didn't think it was that long. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's very long. They don't even have the production capacity to produce containers. And so they're producing warehouses to host everything at the ports and just waiting for containers to come back. There's just so much exports going out. It's an interesting dilemma. And no one's talking about it because it's kind of a scary one. Because a lot of our business and day-to-day is operating kind of carelessly on this commodity system, just taking it for granted. And I think a lot of people are, you know, afraid of how serious these delays really are. When things start running out here, which I think in the next 6 months or so, you know, companies will start running out of supplies. Simple things such as black peppercorns, you know, there may be a shortage of because of this, and it's going to affect prices of products in the market. It's going to affect how we do business altogether, which, you know, I'm actually quite excited for, because when you're working in a high quality product, like what me and my clients work in, we have a lot of wiggle room to withstand these types of blips in the market or in the economy. But if you are, you know, Walmart, and everybody in that supply chain is reliant upon these sliver slim margins, if anything happens to mess with it, it's a very big deal.
Yes, no, it definitely is. Interesting. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So, I mean, COVID had a huge effect on all businesses. I mean, specifically, what did it do to your business? Because did you used to go to actual growers and taste their tea?
Yeah. So I haven't been able to do that. Yes, that stopped. And even getting samples, like the post systems of a lot of countries were shut down for months, only recently have just opened up. So even getting samples over here has been really hard. But of course, you know, the market did kind of stall. You know, restaurant distribution is a big channel for my clients. And when all the restaurants shut down, their demand for tea went down too. So there was just been kind of a lull in movement of business, which has actually helped a lot of businesses in honing in on their marketing, honing in on their e-commerce. And like I said, I've been doing the live streaming. Media has always been really important to my business, but I've always been so busy traveling and networking and doing that the media always took the back seat. And now I've been able to bring media and networking together, and I'm able to reach a, you know, weekly audience of 20,000 people through live streaming, which is great. And that's just growing. You know, I think that's a segment of the entertainment industry that we haven't even seen what it's going to look like. I think real time micro transactional entertainment media is going to be really big.
Yes.
Really big.
So do you foresee, you know, once things start to go back to normal, because actually even where I live, they're starting to allow 25% restaurant capacity. Do you think your business, that's when it's going to really start to pick up, or do you think it's going to?
Oh yeah. And it's going to pick up and it's going to explode. It's going to pick up, it's going to explode, and all of the supply is going to be shooken, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's going to increase the demand for my product even more. And so that's why I'm like feeling this like great passion that if I can maintain my supply and also maintain it at a similar price, I could completely flip my business over to a very successful dominating business, like what I've been trying to build for so long, you know. And I've always just like, I have a very strong ethical code, right? Of the honesty and the transparency. And that's actually worked against me for most of my business's history, because, you know, if you're smart in conventional business, like you hide your sources and you mark up everything, like, and you try to absorb all of the savings that you can find. No, I try to do everything honestly. And I tell exactly who my sources are. But I think in this case, you know, with all of the goodwill that's been built and all of the network that I've built in my honesty and my, you know, vulnerability, that now we're going to be able to leverage that to really come in and sneak. I mean, no one else right now could go get their own boat and sell their products over. It wouldn't be worth it for them. But for me, it's totally worth it. And then I could do a big PR thing out of it, and everybody would know about us. We, you know, bringing back the great tea races of the mid 1800s, you know, like they used to do that. Racing from China to England with the fresh tea. And it was like the first boat that got there, they got the highest price because they were the first ones to market. It was a great tea race. The clipper ships were innovated from that. So I think it's only appropriate to bring back this idea of sail cargo to the tea industry.
And if I remember right, our country had a tea party back in the 1700s, right?
Yeah, we did. And you know, that tea that we threw out, that tea that we threw out was actually really good tea, probably similar to the tea that I'll be bringing in. You know, it definitely wasn't Lipton or iced tea. It was nice oolong tea from China, I believe.
I'm sure.
So that was a big deal for us to throw that all in. It really, and that's why we didn't drink tea for so long, because it was like taboo. It was like this like British culture thing if we identified with drinking tea. So we really didn't start accepting a tea culture and a tea lifestyle until just about a decade ago, I think.
Yeah, no, it does seem to be growing. So, well, Elise, I want to thank you for your time today. It's been great talking to you today. It's, you know, it's one of those things you don't think about, but it's, you know, it's a, you're right, there's a whole supply chain, right? Which is, and it's quite complex, I'm sure.
Yep. Yeah,
so, it is. Best of luck to you, and have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Bye.